Hello and welcome to the Manager Mojo podcast. And today I'm very excited to introduce Bonnie Harvey to you. Bonnie is the co-founder of Barefoot Sellers, along with her partner Michael Houlihan. And she's the co-author of the New York Times best-selling book, The Barefoot Spirit, How Hardship, Hustle, and Heart Built America's Number One Wine Brand. Now, Bonnie's strength is that she translated her ideas into workable processes. And her genius is that she understands how to handle and manage the millions of details that come up with a startup. And I know we're going to have fun learning from her today because she's been there just like we all have and struggling with all of the things that keep us from really maybe being as effective as we'd like to be. Bonnie's passion is she likes helping entrepreneurs choose the right path. And her hard knocks experience, as she describes it, will offer practical solutions for starting a business and managing that business and really avoiding those painful and costly mistakes that affect your profitability. Now, along with Michael, Bonnie was honored as recipient of the 2014 Distinguished Entrepreneur Speakers Award from the Turner School of Entrepreneurship and Innovation at Bradley University. They were also the keynote speakers at the 2014 World Conference on Entrepreneurship in Dublin, Ireland. And I hope to get her to talk about that just a little bit today. And also the 2014 Society of Consumer Affairs Professionals in Business Symposium. In 2014, you can tell she's been very busy. She's also the keynote speaker of the Test Women's Entrepreneurship Forum. And she co-authors weekly business blogs at thebarefootspirit.com and thebrandauthority.net with Michael, as well as consulting, and I'll make sure that I put those links in the show notes for your convenience as you're listening to this podcast. So with all of that, welcome, Bonnie, to the Manager Mojo podcast.
Well, thank you, Steve. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, we're excited about having you with us today because I know that you're going to share a lot of information with us about how you managed a startup and what you learned from that. So before
yes,
we get into that.
That's what I love to do.
Oh, awesome. So before we get into that, would you tell us a little bit about what fun things have you been doing lately and what's really getting you excited these days?
Well, I'm always excited to share the ideas that I learned building Barefoot Sellers from nothing. We started in our laundry room, no money and no knowledge of our industry, and built it to one of the fastest growing wine brands in the nation. And that took 20 years, much longer than we thought. But I truly enjoy sharing the knowledge I learned with young entrepreneurs, with anyone starting a business, and also with anyone that wants to grow their business. Mm. So Michael and I have been traveling throughout the nation and throughout the world, speaking on those subjects. And also we do consulting, which I truly enjoy, as does Michael. And it's very rewarding to see that we can make a difference in people's businesses by sharing the knowledge that we learned, often the hard way, so hopefully they don't have to.
I'm beginning to believe, Bonnie, after all these years myself in business, that there's probably no other way to learn than the hard way.
I believe that to be true. However, there's a lot that can be learned in the universities of people that are studying business and entrepreneurship that can be the building blocks. It really gives you a head start, and I wish that I'd had more of that education before I hit the bricks running, so to speak.
Yeah, it's much better, didn't it?
Yeah, it probably would have taken me 10 years instead of 20 to be successful.
I get it totally. So let's go back to as you were building this wonderful brand. And, you know, tell me just in retrospect, what were maybe the two or three things that you learned pretty quickly that you were like, man, I sure wish that I had known that before?
Well, one of the things that really stands out is we thought because we had an excellent product, gold medal winning product that had a cute name, easy to pronounce, that stood right out on the shelf, that it would be a great seller, and that just was not the case. We had to learn to manage the distribution network. We had to understand what every person that touched our product needed in order to effectively do their job that we were relying on them to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the biggest lesson that anyone going into business can learn is as wonderful as your product or service may be and as much as people may want it, without understanding how you're going to get it to your end user, you're unable to be successful. Mm. So we had to learn the distribution network all the way from our distributors, the retailers, wholesalers, right down to the end user, and talk to each one of them and understand how to put ourselves in the other guy's shoes.
Right.
That was the biggest lesson. So it was more about understanding the process of getting our product to the end user than it was about the product. Now, that was a huge lesson. The other big lesson that we learned was kind of... we learned it backwards because we didn't have money for a vineyard or a winery or a tasting room, but we took control of every aspect of our business. So eventually we got the same full licensing as any winery in the nation. However, because we didn't have the vineyard and the tasting room and the winery, we contracted out for those services, which we managed completely and took responsibility for all aspects of it. But what we learned was what we really had that was of the greatest value were purchase orders.
Hmm.
We could contract out for all the other services that we needed done. And there was plenty of businesses out there that wanted extra business. They wanted our business, and we wanted their services.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people starting businesses, they think, well, if I'm going to go into this business, well, I have to build a production facility or a warehouse or something. And that's not necessarily the case. Look around and see who's already in that business that may be a lot more financially able and a lot more experienced than you are, and use their services. Find out what you do best and do it.
Mm-hmm.
And delegate the rest.
Well, I talk about delegating all the time, about delegating things, and I think people have a really they don't have a real good understanding of what it means to delegate. So, would you mind just telling us a little bit about your philosophy on delegation?
Well, first of all, wanting to be a take charge person and a leader, it was the most difficult thing that I ever tried to learn. I'm still trying to perfect it.
Yeah.
We really want to take charge of all aspects. It's kind of part of being an entrepreneur. We want to do everything. However, it's simply not possible. So what you have to do is, first of all, you lead by example.
Right.
And you understand the process well enough that you can direct someone else to do it. Hopefully this someone else is somebody that's more qualified and experienced than you are.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly we don't want to be shy about that, do we?
No.
We don't know everything, so give it to somebody that's had more experience and knowledge in that area. And the tough part is you have to let them be creative and in the process make mistakes. That's how they're going to grow and learn, just like we have. By making mistakes, by doing it wrong, that's how you learn, and that's okay. And that's probably one of the toughest things. So
it's very tough for people. You mentioned this control thing, and
yes.
I sometimes think of it as kind of like driving, where you just want to have both hands on the wheel, and you're just gripping it so hard you won't let it go. You won't let the car do its part.
Yeah. Yes, Michael has a tendency to have one foot on the gas and one foot on the brake at all times. And it's a bit of like being an entrepreneur. It's what we do. But in order to be most effective in our business and to take advantage of what we do best, we must learn to delegate. So it's practice.
Awesome.
Practice it.
That's awesome. Well, I know you were just recently in Ireland, and you're talking about entrepreneurship. And I'd just like to know what other people around the world, what are they asking about entrepreneurship? What are they really struggling with these days?
Well, I was very surprised, Steve, to find out that the United States is looked up to throughout the world by entrepreneurs because we accept entrepreneurs. We rejoice in their successes, and when there are failures, we say, well, go out there and do it again. We have heroes that are entrepreneurs here in the United States, and I was very surprised to hear that that's not so in other countries. Oftentimes in other countries, if someone decides to go into business for themselves, they think, oh, well, you poor man, you can't get a job, or you do not fit in. And, you know, the worst thing is to have a failure, to go out there and try to start a business and have it be a failure. And that failure cloud is over that individual for the rest of his life or her life. And they don't, like, allow a second chance, where anybody that is what I think is a true entrepreneur, a serial entrepreneur, you know that all of your attempts are not successful. And we're quite willing to accept that here. I feel very blessed that with my kind of personality that I live here in the United States, so I can jump out there and be an entrepreneur and do the kind of businesses that I truly enjoy and not have that fear of failure or rejection, basically, by society. And that's something that really surprised me, Steve.
Yeah, it does. Well, I know that we do have that. That image myself. I'm fortunate in that I've seen that. But this spirit of failure that you're talking about, I see this holding managers and leaders back, even in the United States. Do you find that to be true in some of the things that you've observed as well from the audiences that you're talking about?
I think it's particularly true in larger businesses and corporations. People are afraid to be creative because maybe they'll come up with a silly idea and be mocked. Mm-hmm. I think in small companies, we rejoice all ideas. We celebrate all ideas because it's like brainstorming. It will lead you to another idea and lead you to something that's quite workable. And all of that is fine in a small company, and it should be encouraged. Mm-hmm. In a larger company, oftentimes good ideas are not able to move away from the person that has them. Maybe he'd give it to his supervisor, and the supervisor wouldn't give it to the next person up the ladder, or might change it and call it his or her own instead of giving the first person credit for it that had come up with it. So it has to do with really the idea of the person who's on top, because whatever philosophy they have trickles down into the company. And I think the best leader is someone that will encourage people to come forward with good ideas, that will listen to people from all parts of the business, from what may be considered the worker bees, the majority of the people, and all the way up to the supervisors, managers, vice presidents, presidents. We've got to listen to everyone equally. So we can be creative and innovative and improve, because that's what it takes.
It absolutely does. I know you'll get a kick out of this, but I had back probably 25 years or so ago, I was working really, really large company as an employee. And we had one of the top echelons come in and talk with us, and he actually asked for our opinion. Well, we're normally not asked for our opinion in meetings.
Yes.
And you know, if you gave your opinion, it was you kind of almost had to look at your boss and say, "Well, what is my opinion?" You know, and I know I had I talked very honestly about a problem that we had, and I actually got called in afterwards by my bosses, because they were really disturbed that I would even talk about a problem whenever this individual had actually said, "Hey, I want to know what you're struggling with." And so I learned that thing called politics. And mm-hmm. I got to tell you, I see it everywhere today. Much more so today than I even did 20 years ago in companies that have any size. It's almost like they are afraid to let go of the reins and encourage other people.
I can't see any progress happening with that. And you can just see the fix that you can get into if you talk to some of the automobile producers, that manufacturers out there.
Excellent point.
Hiding a problem just complicates things. In fact, we have a saying at our company, never waste a perfectly good mistake.
I love that.
If there's a problem, if there's something that's gone awry, let's take a close look at it. Let's all talk about it. Do not hide it. Do not say, oh, it's fixed, and, you know, brush your hands together and as if it'll never happen again, because things have a tendency to happen again unless you take a close look at them and write down what it is that you can do to make sure it doesn't reoccur.
Great point. Great point. Well, yeah, I know, Bonnie, whenever I was looking at the story of your business, I know you guys really put a premium on involving your employees and your team members in the business. And so I would like for you to talk a little bit about, I noted that in one place that you actually started interviewing the people that were driving forklifts and delivering and doing all types of things to get their opinion. Could you share a little bit about why you did that and what you learned from it?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, we started with no knowledge of our industry. So if we weren't out there asking questions about people that knew more about it than we did, then we really would have been totally lost. But we kept that philosophy even when we did learn a bit about our business, and we talked to people at the top and the bottom, quote-unquote. We said, let's make friends with people in low places, not just high places.
Mm-hmm.
People that are out there getting the job done, people that have dirt under their fingernails, and people that are out there in the stores. We talked to the clerks about what it is their customers are looking for. Excuse me. What they're looking for in the stores. And mm-hmm. Let's talk about the warehouse man. This is a very interesting story. We had a product that was out in the supermarkets, and there was one store that wasn't selling a bit of it. And we called up our distributor and said, what is going on? And they said, well, I don't know. They've got the product. I guess the sales are bad there. So we sent our salesperson there, because we always had somebody on the ground to check out what was going on in the retail level, the wholesale level, and community level. So he went into the store, and he found out that they had the wrong product in their warehouse in the back room of that grocery store, and they wouldn't bring it out on the shelf because it wasn't what they'd ordered. So that's why the product didn't sell. Okay, so Michael says, why didn't they replace the product? Well, there's miscommunication between the store and our distributor. Michael goes to the distributor and he says, I want to understand how it was the wrong product was delivered. And he said, well, it's got to be the guy in the warehouse. He's the one that picked up the product and put it on the truck. So Michael goes to the warehouse, and here he is. He's talking to the forklift driver. He goes, what's the problem with getting the right product on the truck? Why has this been so difficult? He said, well, it is so dark in here, I can't see the products. There's not enough light in this warehouse. Sit up here in the forklift seat and see what I see. And Michael says, geez, it really is dark. He says, it's a wonder I even deliver anything right. Michael said, well, what do you want? Do you want the labels on the box to be bigger? He said, well, why don't you just put all the cases, all the varietals in a different colored case? That way I can easily see the color and I'll know how to recognize the varietals. And that will help me to deliver the right wine. We said, wow, that sounds very clever. So that's what we did. We put each of our varietals in a different colored case, and we had much, much less problems with wrong deliveries after that. And not only that, but then there was the added benefit of making a beautiful, colorful display when the cases were stacked at retail.
Very cool. And it all comes from forklift driver not being able to read a label.
Yeah, and it comes from the owner being willing to loosen his tie and get down there and talk to people that are handling your product at every level.
That's awesome. What a great, great great example. You know, one of the things that we observe all the time is that managers really struggle with trying to look problems in the eye and deal with them. How did you guys deal with that? Was it a philosophy? Was it something you taught? Because it's obvious that, you know, you didn't have that attitude. So tell us your secret on how to do that.
Well, in addition to welcoming and celebrating problems and taking a good look at them, we also tried very hard to put ourselves in everyone's shoes so we could look at it from all aspects. You can't see a situation, no matter what it is, if you're just standing in your own shoes and looking around. You've got to get out of that space and look at it from different points of view. And when there's a problem that you're having, chances are there's a problem that somebody else is having that you're dealing with as well. We found that sometimes you could take problems or challenges and kind of mix them all together and come up with a solution that satisfies everybody. So you want to be looking at it from other people that are dealing with your product and see what challenges they have. If there's a problem, maybe it's simply in communication. Maybe you're talking to the wrong person or you're talking to them in the wrong way. Mm-hmm. So if you're getting a lot of no's, then you call back a different day and you talk to a different person in a different way. You've got to be creative and open-minded. You can't be stubborn and say, well, that's their problem, or the reason this didn't get done was because I put a call into them and they didn't call me back. You've always got to take that finger that you're trying to point at somebody else and say, hey, they did it wrong. Turn it around, point it right back at yourself, and figure out what you can do to make the situation right. How can you better communicate? How can you better understand the needs of the person that you're relying on to get the job done? And how can you get ideas from all the people around you to help solve the situation and improve it? And write it down. Make sure that it never happens again. You can change the checklist, the policies, the procedure, clause in a contract, job description. There's something that you can change to help the problem be less likely to occur in the future.
that's great advice. And you know, it's trying to divert and get away from the attitude of playing the blame game, isn't it?
Oh, yes, yeah. That's not going to get you anywhere. It's not going to solve your challenges, that's for sure.
Right. Well, I know that you also have a philosophy that's very different than a lot of the corporate world we see in the United States today, and that is that you guys believe that sometimes you got to be less legalistic and more adventurous. So tell me a little bit about your philosophy on that.
Well, as they say, if you're going to make an omelet, you got to break some eggs. So you've got to be willing to get out there and do things a little bit differently. And you've got to, as an entrepreneur, you do things differently. It's like part of our nature. Mm-hmm. So as far as dealing with compliance and legal issues, oftentimes what we would do is what we call advice management. So we have to get the advice of legal counsel, for instance, to see what we can do in a certain state. It's something that we want to do, advertise our product or something. And with the alcohol beverage industry, the product and the rules and regulations are very tight, very controlled. So what we do, instead of saying, can I do this to our legal counsel, we would say, this is what we're going to do. How can I do it?
Right, right.
So you start off with the premise that this is where you're going to go, not can I go there, but this is where we're going to go. Let's figure out how to get there. And that makes a lot of difference. So you're not being directed by the rules and regulations as much as you are setting yourself a goal and finding the way to get there. And that's kind of a mental attitude. And as I called it before, advice management. You've got to understand how to direct your advisors in the direction that you want them to go.
Bonnie, I love that term, advice management. And I also, the reason I ask that is that I believe that this advice management mentality, as you called it, is actually holding back management and leaders from doing their real job every day. I think they look to their bosses for what they should do instead of what they can do and what they need to do. Mm-hmm. And so that, I think they get overmanaged because of it. Do you find that as well from your experiences and talking with other business?
Yes. Managers tend to want to over-control, generally. And the larger a company, the more that tends to be the case. When you're starting a small company and you're building, you've got so many more advantages, and you really do rely on your entire staff to help you succeed, and you rely on them for their good ideas, etc. So it's much easier in a smaller company to involve everyone. And we've actually written a book called The Entrepreneurial Culture, 23 Ways to Engage and Empower Your People. And that is just being released now. And I think it's an excellent book for anyone who is wanting to build that more entrepreneurial culture, which is really teamwork in their company.
Mm-hmm.
And there's many ways that can be done. Not that it's all easy. It takes a lot of changes sometimes to improve. So the company, first of all, has to be willing to change in order to make this happen. But yes, there's many ways to create a better feeling of teamwork, because that's what makes everyone in the business happy. That what makes them more productive. That's what allows the energies to flow and the good ideas to flow.
Mm-hmm.
Is when they know that they're making a difference, not only in their company, but in their community. So how is the company that your employees are working in, what does that company represent beyond the product or service that they are offering? How do they work with their community? How are they a part of their community and their neighborhood? And the more that they're part of the community and neighborhood, the more that they have a happy employees that will be contributing more to the bottom line, basically.
Right. I mean, you want engaged employees, don't you? You want them to be doing those things.
Yes, and by overmanaging them, you're restricting their creativity, and I think that's a well-known fact.
Absolutely.
But changing that attitude has to come from the top. The employees can't do it. Sometimes managers can't do it. It has to come from the top man or woman of the company and their attitude, and they have to step up there and say things are going to change.
And that's great, great advice. Well, for those people that are really thinking about either that next level or that next step in success, what would be your advice to them? Maybe the top two things or so that you would recommend that they really think about and get their arms around.
Well, the first thing is realize what your best attributes are, and hopefully there's something that you really enjoy doing as well.
Mm-hmm.
And find a way to move ahead using those attributes and using that passion that you have to further those attributes. And how it is, the next thing that works in any situation is to understand how to put yourself in the other guy's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in all aspects of the business, everyone that you're doing business with, what is it that they are looking for? What inspires them? How do they communicate that may be different than how you communicate? And how can you best work with them to make them feel appreciated, to make them understand that in order to accomplish your goals, that you have to rely on them? This is part of delegating as well, and it's also part of, for us, what was primarily distribution management. Understanding how to best work with the people all around you. It's really a people game.
Right.
It's understanding people, what it is that they need, how they think, and how to best work with them, and how to bring out the best in each individual, including yourself.
That's awesome. Bonnie, thank you so much for that advice. And as we come to a close, how would you like for our listeners, if they want to reach out to you, what would be the best way to do that?
Well, I think they could check out our websites, and they can contact us on the websites.
Awesome.
Which is, yes, thebarefootspirit.com. And we also have excellent blogs on that, not only that website, but another website called thebrandauthority.net.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to make sure I put those in the notes as well. And we'll link to them. And I, on behalf of the Manager Mojo podcast, I want to thank you so very much for being our guest today. It's just been a great joy.
Well, thank you, Steve. I really love sharing some of the things that I've learned.
Well, it's been fun to hear your passion today, and I want to encourage our listeners, make sure you check out both books that Bonnie mentioned, The Barefoot Spirit, How Hardship, Hustle, and Heart Built America's Number One Brand Wine Brand, and also check out The Entrepreneurial Culture, 23 Ways to Engage and Empower Your People. Bonnie, thank you again for being our guest today, and we wish you much success in all that you do all over the world.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Steve. I had a great time.
Awesome. Thank you.